I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, John Leguizamo. He's known for his edgy theater pieces and wide-ranging film roles. Now he's starring in a new Christmas film, and he's going to tell us about it in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to continue our conversation about the political scandal in Illinois. Governor Rod Blagojevich was arrested Tuesday on federal corruption charges, along with his chief of staff. He's accused of trying to profit in exchange for filling the Senate seat vacated by President-elect Barack Obama. Some of the evidence presented in support of the complaint came from wiretapped conversations that recorded the governor allegedly attempting to make quid pro quo deals. And authorities identified Illinois Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. as the candidate 5 mentioned in court documents. In the comments reportedly recorded by the wiretap, the governor says an emissary of candidate 5 offered to raise $1 million for him. Jesse Jackson Jr. insists he did not engage in any wrongdoing and does not know of anybody who acted on his behalf. Joining us to talk about this, here with me in Washington is Chicago Tribune political reporter Mike Dorning and from Chicago, Chicago Sun-Times columnist Mary Mitchell. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary, tell us a little bit more, if you would, about the conversations that Governor Blagojevich was supposedly having about Senate candidate 5. How was this transaction supposed to occur?
Well, first of all, it's not clear how the transaction would occur. What is clear is that there was an expectation, according to Blagojevich, that he would get something for the Senate seat, that he would get that Senate candidate 5, which we now know has been identified as Jackson, that candidate would raise $500,000, and someone else somehow would raise another $1 million. And this was for Blagojevich's war chest, I suppose, so that when he left office, he would have something to fall back on. But it is not clear exactly how the transaction was going to take place, whether it was going to happen soon. There is some conversation caught on wire that it had to happen before the appointment. So we just don't know.
And Congressman Jackson Jr. Had a press conference yesterday to respond to this once it had been reported by news organizations that he had been identified as this so-called Senate candidate 5. Let's just play a short clip of what Congressman Jackson had to say.
I want to make this fact plain. I reject and denounce pay-to-play politics and have no involvement whatsoever in any wrongdoing. I did not initiate or authorize anyone at any time to promise anything to Governor Blagojevich on my behalf. I never sent a message or an emissary to the governor to make an offer, to plead my case, or to propose a deal about a U.S. Senate seat, period.
Now, Mary, Congressman Jackson went on to say that he thought that he was a strong contender for the seat because he had seniority. Of all the mentioned candidates, he had the most longest service in Congress and felt that he was the front runner. Do you think that that's true?
Well, I think he definitely saw it that way. He still sees it that way. He really wanted that seat. He's been lobbying for it. He's gone to the editorial boards. He's got support from his own cadre of supporters. So he definitely wanted the seat. We're very clear about that.
It's clear that he wanted it, but was he viewed as a front runner, as it were?
Oh, definitely a front runner. He's done a great job in Congress. He's been held onto that job for 14 years. He's highly respected. He has the ability to raise money. He has the ability to get other people elected. So I don't think there's anything done. And up to this point, there's not been a tarnish on his record.
Mike, as a national figure, tell me a little bit more about Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. It's not just the name. He obviously played a critical role in the political campaign this year.
He worked very hard for Barack Obama around the country, particularly in African-American audiences, but also in other audiences. I remember running into him in Iowa at various times while he was working for Obama. And he was a field organizer for his father. So he has for a long time been trying to rally Democrats around the country, again, particularly African-American audiences around the country, toward lots of candidates. I remember a long time ago traveling with him to various different cities, including Texas, where he was rallying voters for Martin Frost. And that was one of the reasons he wound up on the Appropriations Committee, because the Democratic leaders in Congress were indebted to his work, not just in Illinois, but elsewhere.
Do you have any sense of who President-elect Obama
wanted for that Senate seat. And if you'd also talk about how the Obama campaign and how he and his group are responding to these circumstances.
There's a general belief, obviously shared by Governor Blagojevich, that he wanted his good friend and advisor, Valerie Jarrett, who is a prominent figure in Chicago, to be the U.S. senator. Now, the Obama people put out the story that that's not true, that they always wanted her for a senior advisor, but there's...
Well, she's been named as a senior advisor. That happened weeks ago.
But her name was circulated as a U.S. Senate candidate for a while until she suddenly was going to become a senior advisor. In fact, it became known that she wanted to be a senior advisor shortly after these conversations with Blagojevich, sort of having these ideas that he could get something from Obama either directly or in some three-way transaction involving a union. In fact, some of the Obama insiders have told me that at the time, Valerie Jarrett did tell people, oh, I'm nervous about taking the Senate seat if that's going to make Rod Blagojevich feel like Obama owes him. Now, those are people who may not know everything she was thinking in every conversation, but that was a story she put out among some of the people in the campaign. There's also some reason to believe that Obama would like Emile Jones to be his successor.
The state Senate president.
Yeah, or would be pleased. I'm not sure that he would be lobbying for him. And the reason is that Emile Jones was a great mentor to Barack Obama and someone who helped position him to get the U.S. Senate seat. So that would be someone that obviously would have an emotional tie to Barack Obama. That said, I don't think he's actually taken any sides on this.
But I find Mary? What you said very interesting, because if Valerie Jarrett did feel that they're uncomfortable about something or felt that there was going to be an expectation that President-elect Obama would owe Governor Blagojevich something, isn't that what we're talking about? I mean, why wouldn't she bring that forward? Why wouldn't she blow the whistle on that? Because the only way that we can stop this sort of behavior is for people to complain about and say it's inappropriate. And I think it should have been made public if there was any discomfort or any sign that Blagojevich wanted anything for that appointment. It should have been made public.
Well, is there a distinction between feeling that he would have owed him politically or because obviously there's a continuum of behavior here. And this whole idea that there's some sort of that people owe each other in politics is not a new one. I think the question here is that he's trying to monetize this. I mean, he's actually trying to get specific compensation for himself and his wife and campaign contributions in exchange. And he was literally setting a price and bidding it out. I mean, is there a difference, though?
Yeah, I mean that, there's definitely a big difference. And I just say only what I know is what I've heard indirectly that she told some people. I suspect that she hasn't totally unloaded everything that she knows candidly directly to me, certainly. And I don't know whether she would have known about these schemes or not.
Do you know whether she's been interviewed by the authorities on this?
I don't know personally. And indeed, the Obama campaign has been extremely tight-lipped about this so far. No one, including Rahm Emanuel, the nominee to be White House chief of staff or designate, has said anything about their conversations with Blagojevich. In fact, Barack Obama has been very, very narrow and circumscribed about what he's been willing to say, only that he personally did not have a direct personal conversation with the governor about this specific issue. So we don't know. Typically, these sorts of conversations would be conducted by emissaries, and certainly Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff, is someone who's very close with Blagojevich and close with Obama, so he would be a logical channel. We don't know who might have had what conversation, and they haven't said anything about that.
Mary, do you find it strange that he would not have had a one-on-one conversation with the governor about who his preference would
well,
have been
I,
for
I
that
don't,
seat?
No, not a one-on-one. I don't find that strange, but I do find it strange if no one who represented him or was close to him or was advising him did not, no one in his circle had a conversation with someone connected to the governor about that seat, because how then would the governor know that his favorite was either Valerie Jarrett or, as some have said, Emo Jones, although I find that hard to believe. I'm not buying that. It just seems far-fetched. Why would he not? Why would he not advise? We had stories about the president-elect wanting an African-American to replace him. He didn't communicate that to Begovich in some form or fashion. I just think this is all very fuzzy. There's a lot of questions that still needs to be answered.
Well, I can see why someone would not, because you wouldn't want to tell that person no directly, because that would be perceived as perhaps disrespectful to the office or something of that sort. But we need to I just need to jump in just for a minute to say, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about the Illinois so-called pay-for-play scandal with Chicago journalist Mike Dorning of the Chicago Tribune and Mary Mitchell of the Chicago Sun-Times. Mary Mitchell, how are people reacting to this in Chicago? When it was reported that Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. had been identified as the Senate candidate number five, even though the U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald took pains to say at the initial press conference announcing the charges that no one should draw any inference from the fact that Blagojevich may have mentioned these individuals or mentioned or said that he had conversation with people, that in and of itself should not be deemed as evidence of these individuals' guilt or complicity.
Right.
How was that news received?
Well, first of all, I think that, you know, this is so stunning and people are still reeling from the shock of it, the very crassness of it. There are people, I've gotten phone calls from people who are gleeful that Representative Jackson has had his own problems in terms of carrying the father's name. Some of the things that people don't like about the father, they've attributed to Jackson. So he's had to carry that burden. So I got phone calls from people saying, I hope he goes down. And other people are saying, you know, very sad about this. He's seen as a rising star, part of the new vision of politics that President-elect Obama has unveiled. And so now he's caught up in this tawdry situation. I think people are just really trying to digest this all. And it's another blow, of course, to the image of the state.
To the image of the state. And Mike Dorning, what about for the Obama folks? How are they responding to this?
Well, so far they've said very little. Obama himself has been very circumscribed. You would think that there would be some outrage about his Senate seat being auctioned off in this very crass way. But his comments in the first 2 days have been very cool and circumscribed, and there hasn't been much information that's come out of the campaign. Now, nationally, it's very interesting to see this juxtaposition because we saw within 1 month Illinois represent this sort of soaring possibility of democracy, a symbol to the world of how every dream is possible and the American ideal of opportunity for all, you know, stands and shines to the world, and people shouldn't be cynical about politics. And then when it comes time to choose his successor, it's done in the most cynical, most crass, base way that's hidden from the public and only revealed through wiretaps and a very vigorous U.S. attorney.
Well, I think it has to be said again at this point that an arrest is not evidence of guilt, that he's innocent until proven guilty. There has not been a court proceeding other than the fact that there's been
an
arrest
and
a charge.
Though.
But do the Obama people feel tainted by this? Do they feel that this casts a shadow upon them as
privately,
they are putting
furious.
Their administration together?
They're furious privately, the people I've spoken to. They say that they're incredibly mad at Rod Blagojevich. And the people around Barack Obama have extreme loyalty to him and have tried to protect him throughout the campaign. And then here you have this governor who the people around Barack Obama feel like this is this great moment. They've had this great transition. And above all, Obama represents this idea of hope and possibility and a not cynical way of looking at politics. People, when he was elected, called it the death of irony again. And the people around him, many of them really believe that. And so then for them to see this governor, who many of them, you know from Illinois politics, do this crass thing that, however, unfairly taints their transition, they're furious about it.
But they missed an opportunity. I think this is a missed opportunity for them. Because after all, what we see in the complaint is that Blagojevich just was furious that he couldn't get anything from Obama, that he couldn't expect anything from President-elect Obama but appreciation. And that, to me, puts a positive spin on the whole vision that Obama has brought in terms of change. That's different. So I think that they've missed an opportunity to spin this thing in a much more positive direction instead of letting it taint them and taint their new administration. It doesn't have to.
But, Mary, given that the state's previous governor, a Republican, George Ryan, is in prison now on corruption charges, is there really any way for the Republican Party to take advantage of this current circumstance? I mean,
they certainly can in an open election, and that's what has to happen. Here's an opportunity to get rid of a system for appointing a senator that really encourages people to do something, you know, some proper. Are you giving too much power to one person? With all the lobbying going on and all the desperate moves people were making just to try to get that seat, the competition, the fierceness of it, it was bound to blow up. And I think that this is an opportunity to have a fair election, which is, if you have an open election and a fair election, of course, is an opportunity for a Republican.
And Mike, final thought from you with a minute we have left. Has the president-elect expressed any opinion? I mean, he said that he thinks that Governor Blagojevich should resign, but has he said how he thinks the seat should be filled now?
No, he hasn't said anything on that. But going forward, as you sort of keyed in earlier, this does represent a big help for the National Republican Party to try to exploit this. But as Mary made the key point in all this that I'm sure we'll hear, which is the evidence the U.S. attorney has shown above all is this evidence that this cynical governor was infuriated by the Obama camp that they weren't willing to give him something. And that's sort of a key piece of evidence out in the public that made an impression already on the public. So I suspect you'll see that spun forward by the Obama administration in the days ahead.
Mike Dorning is a political reporter for the Chicago Tribune. He was kind enough to join us here in our Washington, D.C. studios from Chicago. Chicago Sun-Times columnist Mary Mitchell, she was kind enough to join us from member station WBEZ. I thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
You.